Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday Morning MV Pro Call. Today is February 23rd, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to Motor Vitality on whatever podcast application you happen to use, or by visiting MotorVitality.com, where you can listen to years and years and years worth of archives. Definitely love having you on live, though, and I have to, you know, I've mentioned this before lots of times. Sometimes we send out a message reminding everybody or letting everybody know, you know, what the topic's going to be, and sometimes we don't. And the times that we don't, which I think was this last week, we may have sent out a generic. But you guys are those of you that are here live, I so appreciate it that you find value in this, and I'm truly honored to be able to kind of guide the call or lead the call a little bit. So I appreciate that you guys put it on your calendar and you consider it valuable enough to come on. It means a lot. I appreciate that. And those of you listening to it recording, I know sometimes the time doesn't allow you to be here live. So I love hearing from you, those of you that are out there doing that. So with that, I did just want to mention that our next premium WQA certified installer and training course is sold out. The next one, we are registering courses that start for that one beginning in March. So if you're interested in that, please reach out to us. We still do have a little bit of room for the installer for sales and for the standard installer, which is a shorter 3-day course. So if you need information on any of those, please reach out to us and let us know. We'd love to have you on the classes. I do want to start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, which is by asking, was there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened this last week that is worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with? Any questions? Anybody have anything? Well, if not, then I am going to jump straight into our topic today. And I wanted to talk about East Palestine or Palestine. Not sure. Actually, I bet you would have to go to East Palestine in order to know how they say it in East Palestine. Do they say East Palestine? Anybody know? Anybody from there know how they say it? Is it Palestine or Palestine? Anybody heard that? I've kind of heard both people say it kind of both ways, and I don't really know. Jen and I have found that when we've traveled the country, people, I remember the hardest lesson I learned on that was we were working with a client in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and we were calling it Lancaster. And apparently it's definitely not Lancaster, it's Lancaster. And that's how they immediately identify you as an out-of-towner if you say Lancaster, which is the way it was, the way it's spelled. But so if anybody's from that part of Ohio and I'm saying it wrong, my apologies. But in case you guys have been living under a rock for the last couple of weeks, what happened in East Palestine, Ohio, was that on February 3rd, there was a train derailment, pretty huge train crash, and there were multiple chemicals that spilled. Specifically, vinyl chloride was probably the largest. And we're going to talk about those chemicals and how to address that here in a couple minutes. But basically, because they found the stuff was spewing, they decided that the authorities decided the best way to deal with this stuff was to create a controlled larger breach and then catch the stuff on fire. And so they created a pool, you know, dug some trenches, so it would flow into this pool, and they caught the stuff on fire, and some of the pictures are actually pretty disturbing. You see these huge plumes of black smoke spewing into the air. It's been kind of interesting. For the first week or so, they had a 1 mile evacuation order around, you know, 1 mile radius around this stuff. And they came in and said, oh, you know, for your inconvenience, if you live within that 1 mile, we'll give you $1,000 for your inconvenience. And it's always amazing how these things start off that way. Like they're like, oh, no big deal. Here's $1,000. Go on and, you know, no big deal. And then you start having people, you know, that are, you know, they're gone for 2 or 3 days and they come back to their houses and now they're, you know, they're getting sick and they have people wearing hazmat suits coming in and saying, oh yeah, the air is fine. No problem. Air and water are fine. You know? And so it really, it creates some opportunity for a lot of misinformation, a lot of conspiracy theories, and partially because it's hard to find the straight answer, right? You get the media that wants to jump on the fear side. You do have some people that want to take advantage of the situation and make it political. It's already becoming highly polarized where everybody's blaming it on, you know, both political parties are blaming it on each other and, you know, that this happened and they didn't respond fast enough. And, you know, and it's sometimes difficult to get to wade through the noise, you know, the politics, the misinformation, the conspiracy theories, and figure out exactly, okay, how serious is the problem? And more importantly, how does it affect our industry and what we do? Now, there are multiple issues when you have these types of spills. Obviously, it's air as well. You know, one of the things that happened that, you know, was a concern, obviously, when they burned this stuff is a byproduct of some of these chemicals turned into dioxins, and dioxins tend to be heavy and they cling to things. And so, you know, they cling to dust particles or to even, you know, trees and leaves and stuff like that. And then they can fall back to the ground, coating, you know, people's homes and cars and you know, their pets outside. I don't know what whatever it's coating, but it can seep back down into the water supply. So dioxins are definitely a little more toxic as well. So it's not just one issue. So what I thought I would do today, just on the call, is because I'm not even in the home every day like some of you out there. I'm not answering the calls from customers. But I am curious. I mean, I have already been asked multiple times in the last couple of weeks about this. You know, how do you treat it? What's the issue? What are the, the risk? You know, how serious of a problem is it? Those types of things. I'm curious if this has come up with you guys. Anybody out there in the home, has anybody asked you about it, and what has been your response? Anybody run across this at all?
I know,
yes,
on Water Treatment Pros, there's been a couple people that I think have posted on it, and, you know, it's similar to Flint, where somebody brings it up, and, you know, their first question is, how do they take care of it? You know, and especially they start talking about it, you know, how do they take care of it in their home? Of course, you know, I think people are realizing that I don't want this to come off as a political type thing, but they're realizing that whether it's government, EPA, the railroad, whoever, things aren't going to happen quickly. So they are understanding they have to, you know, do the point of entry or, you know, the final barrier, basically. And so people are just asking, you know, what do these homeowners do? And I think it's really important that everybody, that as sales professionals, we know the answer to that.
Yeah, agreed. And, I mean, we need to know what, I think as professionals, especially if we're going to come off credible, That's why I wanted to do this call today. I'm going to identify exactly what the chemicals are, and I'm going to give some suggestions on how to answer that, on how to, you know, how to address that. But I kind of wanted to give you guys a chance first. And thank you, Jen. You're right. I've seen it there too. And it becomes so hard because we live in such a polarized, especially a politically polarized environment right now, that it's difficult even for us within. I mean, we all share an industry, but we also all have our own political viewpoints. And so it's hard sometimes not to look at the solutions or even the problems through the lenses of the rest of our beliefs, you know. And so that's a very real challenge when we're talking to our customers and those types of things as well. But what, anybody else running across this, or have you run across it in the home, you know, even outside of our industry?
Hey, anybody Kelly, this is Kelly and Jen, this is Rob at G Freed Water, first time on the call. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Rob. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. So far, awesome. Appreciate it. So we did an installation last week for a customer down in the just outside of the Philadelphia marketplace, Bucks County area, and they were actually asking us about it and our opinions and our thoughts. And you know, we didn't speculate anything. Information was still, like you said, new and still evolving. But you know, I don't know if they had some family out that way or some friends, but you know, best to, like you said, identify and give it time to figure out what was going on. But you know, I really leaned on the labs, and I said, honestly, that the best thing to do is get a thorough analysis and really find out what you have in your home supply, and then build a system that way and see what's available that's going to fit best. So point of use, like Jen said, I think is critical to some of these people, to give them that peace of mind, because I don't know that there's a lot of confidence in the information that was being distributed. So
yeah. Certainly looks like on the surface that the proper information wasn't forthcoming initially, you know. But I always say on that stuff, you know, these are humans doing this stuff, you know, and sometimes, and we see it in our industry, right? Just because you have a job and a title doesn't necessarily mean that you know what you're doing. And sometimes, you know, that's where the information comes from. But yeah, so let's talk, let's kind of go into the educational portion here, and just kind of, I want to just kind of let you guys know, okay, which chemicals were they, and then let's talk about how we address that. And, you know, I want to do that as objectively as possible today. So there were five toxic chemicals that basically were identified as problematic or potentially problematic. Almost all of them, by the way, had to do with plastic production, manufacturing. The biggest in I think the largest was vinyl chloride, which is a known carcinogen. It's a colorless flammable gas that's used to produce polyvinyl chloride or PVC. That's used for packaging materials and a range of electronic, medical, and construction products. Symptoms of that include drowsiness, disorientation, numbness, tingling of the extremities, and nausea. Sort of like pregnancy, I think. Isn't that the same symptoms of, having never been pregnant, I don't know, but it seems like I've heard that somewhere. The chemical can also irritate the eyes and skin. So I guess that's how you tell a difference. Like you're having those symptoms, like, am I pregnant? Oh, wait, no, my eyes hurt. They're irritated. It must be, I must have, like, you know, somehow ingested vinyl chloride. So anyway, I actually just, the door just opened and I got a look of death for that joke. I didn't know that came up at all.
Stop digging.
Digging, poking the bear, right? Exactly. So the next was butyl acrylate. That's a colorless liquid with a strong fruity odor that's often used to produce plastics, polymers, coatings, and resins. Exposure to the chemical can cause irritation to the eyes and skin, rashes, and breathing difficulties, according to the CDC. There's isobutylene. That's a colorless gas that's used to produce plastics, packaging materials, and resin. Exposure can cause symptoms such as dizziness and headache. That one, the train was carrying that one, but they didn't see any signs of a breach with the car carrying that chemical. And then there's ethylene glycol and ethylexyl acrylate. Ethylexyl acrylate is a colorless liquid that's commonly used to produce plastics and polymers. Ethylene glycol is a synthetic compound used in inks, paint, hydraulic brake fluids, and antifreeze, and both can cause irritation of the skin and eyes, as well as sore throat and nausea with exposure at high concentrations. So here's the thing that they all have in common. They are all VOCs, volatile organic chemicals, okay, volatile organic compounds, which means, among other things, that they can be found in their both in a liquid and in a gas form, and they're easily converted, which means that they very easily will turn into a gas if they are in their liquid form, which means that it can be, even if they're in a liquid form, you know, if they're in the water supply and there's a temperature change, they're highly reactive to temperature changes, meaning that they can move from a liquid to a gas pretty easily, which means that there's also air contamination. So here's the question for you guys. Will a membrane on a reverse osmosis system, there's a little quiz question, will a membrane on a reverse osmosis system remove a VOC or reduce, more accurately?
Kelly, do you have any idea on the molecular weight on any of these?
I do not have I see what you're doing there, Paul. I ask a question, and you're turning it back around and saying if I know the molecular weight.
I'm just going to the source.
No, I do not know the molecular weight.
I'm not trying to be a pain. It's just the idea of, you know, this cutoff generally with membrane technology when the molecular weight is below. And you can ask Peter about this, but I think it's somewhere around
160. Well, so these are all VOCs. In general, let me just help you guys out. In general, a membrane on a reverse osmosis system will not reduce VOCs. It's going to slip through just like any other gas. Membrane technology is not the right answer for VOC reduction. However, as part of most reverse osmosis systems, you do have carbon, granular activated carbon, or in some cases a VOC filter, you know, you have catalytic carbon. Generally speaking, carbon is what is used to reduce VOCs from the water. Now, here's the challenge that we have, and we've seen this with multiple chemical spills and challenges that we've had. You know, every so often you have these big ones. I don't remember the name of it, but there was the methylene blue something in the Ohio River. Also in Ohio, a couple years ago, there was a huge spill, and it caused the, you know, the river to turn orange and also had a lot of dead fish, and it flowed all the way down. I can't remember the name of that, but that was a big deal a few years back. And, you know, we ran into that problem. The problem with a lot of these chemicals, you know, are they on the EPA's minimum drinking water list? You know, the maximum contaminant level of the EPA's list? The answer is no. And that is because there are, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of chemicals out there, both, you know, man-made and natural, but mostly man-made, that it's just impossible. I mean, look at the PFAS alone, you know, PFAS being a category of man-made chemical that, you know, there's, I think by last count, over 10,000 PFAS and PFOA chemicals that fall into this category. It is impossible for the EPA or any other agency to test and regulate every single chemical that has been produced. You change one molecule here or there. And so we can put them in categories, but it's just impossible to test for them and you know, and say you can't dump this in the water, you can't do this or that. And so we don't, you know, so much of it is ambiguous. We don't know the impacts that they are going to have on people. We just know that sometimes in those categories they do. So is there a reverse osmosis system or, frankly, any treatment method that is certified, third-party validated to reduce or remove these specific contaminants? And the answer is no. And so when we're talking to a customer and they say, you know, do you have a system that's validated and certified to reduce this? We have to be honest with them. And the way we are going to answer that, I think, the way I would recommend answering it, and I think I like what you said, Rob, you know, independent testing and validation is important. And when I say independent, I don't mean, you know, I have to admit, I would be a little skeptical just because I tend to be cynical anyway. If you have somebody, a lab or a group that's paid or incentivized by one entity or another, you know, if you've got, a government-sponsored lab, I don't know that I would go there first. I would probably go to an independent lab, you know, somebody that did not have a vested interest either way. And the problem is sometimes you have those labs that are sponsored by attorneys or lawsuits or, you know, different. I mean, maybe they want to be part of it that way, you know. So it does require a little effort to find somebody that hopefully will give you an honest or objective or multiple opinions. You know, you get multiple tests done. Of course, there's a cost associated with that, and, you know, which is a whole different problem. But so testing, validating, verifying, making sure that the stuff is there, I think that's good. That's important. But also what we can do is say, look, we do not have a system that is – there is not a system in existence that is validated, third-party validated or certified to reduce vinyl chlorine. However, we do know that vinyl chlorine is a VOC, and we do know that the technology used to remove or reduce other VOCs is carbon or catalytic carbon. And so most reverse osmosis systems out there do have carbon as pre-filtration and post-filtration, and that's certainly going to have an impact on reducing those VOCs. Generally speaking, they do other VOCs. There are some VOCs that these systems are certified to reduce. And so if you extrapolate that out, you know, you can say that that yes, carbon is likely to reduce these VOCs. What would you do in your home? I would certainly have, you know, well, and if I were in East Palestine, I would actually have, I think, I would like to have, I'd probably have a whole house carbon filter or something, certainly in the areas where I am using the water, breathing the water, you know, because if it's a VOC, again, it can, you know, temperature changes in the water, you heat the water up, now it's evaporated and you can ingest it. So I think there's an argument for having a whole house carbon filter or certainly a carbon filter in an area that, you know, where you're going to be exposed to the water. But also an air filter. I mean, I know that most of us on this call are not in in the air purification business, but you know, a HEPA filter is not going to work in this situation. The molecules, and Paul, I don't know exactly what they are. I do know that they are smaller than what a HEPA filter is going to reduce. So,
by the way,
you know,
Kelly, sorry, I wasn't trying to put you on the spot with that. Sorry with that question.
Yeah, no, you're fine. But, you're fine, Paul.
But I was just thinking about it. You know, if it were my own house or if my sister lived out there, I would probably say point of entry for sure.
Yeah.
Because the way you're describing these, inhalation may be 50 or even more percent of the problem versus ingestion.
Yeah.
And I'd be thinking about aeration, and going after it. Not with the aeration systems that you use for iron and hydrogen sulfide, but the ones you use, for example, like with radon. where you're pumping air through the water, stripping it, and then venting it to the atmosphere and get it out of there.
Yeah.
But that's not
cheap. Obviously there's costs associated with those types of things. And like I said, we're not in the air purification business really, but if we're talking about this stuff, I mean, we can certainly address the water issues. We can give them, look, these are the technologies that are generally used to treat these types of chemicals. These are what I would recommend. This is what I would do if it were my home. I would put in a carbon system. In fact, if given the choice in this scenario for this particular contaminant, I think point of entry as opposed to point of use, I would have both. But I think point of entry is a better choice. And I would do some sort of air purification as well, something that did have a carbon filter. Because carbon, whether it is in the air or in the water, carbon is going to be, should be effective in reducing these and, you know, filtering these things out. Any thoughts on that? Any comments or thoughts? There's so much information. I think what I would say just in summary over all of this is make yourself an expert as objectively as possible. Okay, when you're talking to the customers, don't make claims that you can't back up. Be aware of what's going on. Make it sound like you know what you're talking about so you don't get ambushed with this question from somebody so that you go, you know, I really don't know. Well, what are you, just an you're a sales guy who memorized a script, and so you're just selling water treatment and making claims that this is all going to fix it? You know, make yourself an expert so that you can speak intelligently about this stuff. All right, final thoughts, comments? Anybody else? Any questions? Guys are silent. Guys are still. Are you guys all mad at me for the pregnancy joke? It's been a long time since I experienced that, but that was also a symptom. The silent treatment was always part of that. Or I don't know if that was pregnancy. It might have just been living with me. That may have been the results of that. But what were you saying, Paul?
Kelly, Michigan was on the national news this morning because of the weather. Did you experience bad ice and problems where you are?
We did get ice. Yes, we did. We got quite a bit of ice.
You didn't lose power?
No loss of power. But thank you for asking. Yeah. No loss of power. Everything's good here. So but any other thoughts? Comments? Guys, I really appreciate very much everybody hopping on. I hope that you, as always, took something from the call, and we will talk to you next month, if not before. So next Thursday, and we will be in March. So can't even believe it already. Thanks, everybody. Be safe. We'll talk to you next week, if not before.
Thank you. Thanks, Kelly.